Thank you for pronouncing my name right. That usually doesn't happen. So I'm here to talk about the role of single-entry communities in walkability, specifically in Southwest communities. And I have no financial relationships to disclose. So I don't feel like I need to stand up here and sell the benefits of physical activity. I'm pretty sure everybody is aware that physical activity is good for our health. And recently there have been some efforts to promote walking as a means to increase rates of physical activity. Walking is the most common, most functional form of physical activity. People who walk more have better health outcomes, and it doesn't take a lot of special equipment to walk. So the Surgeon General has even recently put out a call to action in the spring to promote walking as a way to reduce sedentary behavior. So we do know, though, from research, somewhat recent research, that the built environment and community design really heavily influence rates of walking. And so if we don't really understand the way community design impacts walking, we can't truly promote it unless we fully understand it. So we've come a long way in designing our communities. Communities used to actually be designed for walking. You can see there on the left, the streets were narrow, they were gridded, they were essentially made to move people, and you see on the right what we have evolved into, because we wanted this at one point, and now we're starting to go back to the other, but our streets are no longer gridded, it's very single use, and not meant for travel by foot at all. And we do know that that is a problem when it comes to walking, because the more connected and more gridded streets are, the more convenient it is to walk, the shorter trip distances are. You can just see from that picture at the bottom that if the street network is very gridded, the one on the left, you have multiple ways you can walk, different sites you can see, it's a shorter distance. If you look at the one on the right, you have one choice and it's significantly longer. So we do know that street connectivity is one of the most important factors when it comes to walking, because trip distance makes such a difference when somebody's making that decision. Am I going to walk a quarter mile or am I going to walk 1 mile? So we know that's really important. So in 2010, there's a lot of research coming out looking at walkability and how conducive environments are to walking. And in 2010, a walkability index was published. There is no real standard for measuring walkability yet, but this one in 2010 that came out, it sort of serves as the gold standard. A lot of articles, researchers are using this method. So the way they measure street connectivity in this standard is that they measure intersection density, so the number of intersections, true intersections, in the overall neighborhood. So we saw from that gridded picture, the more intersections there are, the more connected the neighborhood is. And this is the most important factor in this walkability index. It's weighted by a factor of 2. So intersection density plays a big role, because walking distance is the most important decision-making factor when it comes to walking. However, in the Southwest, and particularly Las Vegas, which is where this research was done, we do have some very unique design features that might influence walkability. If anyone's been there, I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. But we have a lot of single-entry communities. And so a single-entry community is just what it is. It's one way in and one way out. There's not a lot of options. And you can see from the bottom picture there, sometimes they're gated, but they're not always gated. They can be single-entry and not be gated. And they have these high privacy walls that surround the entire development. And whether or not they're single entry or not, almost all developments in Vegas do have these high cement block privacy walls. So they're usually abutted to the sidewalk. Sometimes, depending on how old the neighborhood is, you might have a nice little buffer in between the sidewalk or the wall and the street. And sometimes it's just right abutted to the street, which doesn't make the most pleasant walking environment. But if we calculate intersection density without taking into account these single-entry communities and these privacy walls, then we're going to underestimate walkability. So just to kind of give an example of what I'm talking about, this is an example of a neighborhood in Vegas, and you can see that the blue line is where the route you would have to take to walk if you lived in that community. Now, there is a high privacy wall that separates the residential from the other side, where there's a grocery store, there's a coffee shop, there's restaurants, there's you know, tanning, nail salons. There's a whole retail area, and there's a huge blocked privacy wall. You can't get to it. So if you walked, you'd be walking 3/4 of a mile to get there. But if you could go through that wall, you'd be walking less than 1/10 of a mile. So most people aren't going to walk 3/4 of a mile to the grocery store to turn around and walk 3/4 of a mile back with their 2 or 3 bags of groceries. However, more people would probably walk less than 1/10 of a mile to the grocery store. So if we really want to be able to promote walking, we need to understand these factors and maybe figure out how we can mediate some of these issues. So the purpose of this study was to look at and determine if the number of intersections that are captured using the standard method differed significantly after adjusting for the presence of single-entry communities. So it was the Las Vegas metropolitan area, and Las Vegas is divided into pretty much 4 jurisdictions, so we included all of them. It was just the metropolitan area, and chose 20 geographically different neighborhoods. So just based on a map, they were just differently, geographically different. And then the intersection density was calculated using the standard methodology, which uses ArcGIS to calculate the number of intersections divided by the square kilometers in that neighborhood. And then those neighborhoods were closely examined using either imagery data from ArcGIS or Google Maps. And sometimes it's kind of hard to tell whether or not it's truly a single-entry community, and so if that were the case, ground truthing was done, where you literally went to the neighborhood and drove around to make sure it was or was not a single-entry community. And then once those single-entry communities were identified, the intersections within those were removed, and intersection density was then recalculated, and I used a paired t-test to determine if there was a difference before and after adjusting for these single-entry communities. So to give you an example of what I did. This is another example of a single-entry community. You can see the X is the only entrance in and out. There's about 12 intersections within this neighborhood, and they would all be removed because truly they're not intersections that lead anywhere. The only intersection that leads somewhere is the entrance. So those 12 would be removed. So this is a pretty busy slide, but I just wanted to show the number of intersections, the intersection density before and after. But essentially what the results showed was that there was a statistically significant decrease in the number or in the intersection density after adjusting for single-entry communities. And the eta squared statistic did indicate a large effect size. We did have about 70% of the neighborhoods did have at least one single-entry community. We had one neighborhood that had all single-entry communities, so it varied. Some, but most had at least one. So essentially what we found were that single-entry communities do result in an overestimation of intersection density, which results in an overestimation of trip convenience and underestimates walking distance, which is an overestimation of walkability. So we know that single-entry communities impede route choices, they increase trip distance. So if researchers are examining the influence of neighborhood walkability on minutes of physical activity, they might underestimate the influence. So they might say, well, you know, these people in this walkable neighborhood are getting the same amount of physical activity as the people in the low walkable neighborhood, so maybe clearly walkability doesn't matter in Las Vegas, when truly the neighborhood might not be as walkable as it seems, depending on the design of the neighborhood. Okay. So the methods that I used were actually a pretty conservative method of estimating the influence of these this design feature. So it probably has a bigger impairment than I'm even showing here, because the communities in Las Vegas, some of them can have greater than or more than one entry, but they are still completely surrounded by these high privacy walls. So the street networks still might not be as connected as they might appear. So for example, here is an a community that has 2 entrances. So this community is not single entry by our definition, because it had to have only 1 entrance, but clearly you can see it looks actually very connected. There's lots of intersections within this neighborhood. But clearly you can see that they don't lead you anywhere other than inside that neighborhood. So if you want to walk around your neighborhood for recreational type physical activity, that's great. But if you wanted to walk to a destination, you only have really two options that take you one way or the other. So this shows that the high privacy walls and our just unique design characteristics probably have a greater impact on walkability in Las Vegas, even not being shown by the results of this study. Some communities actually have, they might have more than one entrance, but they might be gated. So we have a lot of gated communities in Vegas. And so gated communities can actually increase trip distance for non-residents, so people that live within that neighborhood, but they don't live within those gates. So here's another example. If you look at the one on the right, if you have access to that gate, so you have a little clicker that opens the gate for you, or you have the code to get you in, you can walk through the neighborhood and get from point A to point B, and you walk about a half a mile. But if you don't have access to that neighborhood or you don't live within that neighborhood, you're walking completely around the wall one way or the other, and either way you're walking a much longer distance, almost double the distance, than if you have access to walk through that neighborhood. So what does this mean for practice? Well, the Community Preventive Services Task Force, which I think everyone's probably aware of, but that is a group of experts, and they review evidence-based literature, and they have decided that community and street-scale urban design changes are effective interventions at increasing physical activity. So if we really want to make efforts to improve walkability through urban design, we need to truly understand the influence of these single-entry communities. And if we go about trying to make changes without fully understanding the influence of these or the importance of these in our design, then our efforts might not be as effective as we would hope. So it would not be beneficial for a jurisdiction to invest lots of money in shade trees and nice sidewalks or water fountains or amenities that community members might want when no one's going to walk, because it's still going to take them a mile to walk to the grocery store. So we need to really understand this. There are some, I almost want to say simple, but not simple at all, measures that might be able to minimize the effects of this. We could create some pedestrian walkways by just essentially putting a hole in the wall. It would be very minimal cost if it had a significant return on investment by people walking and becoming more physically active. However, there would be a very big challenge when it comes to this, because a lot of people who do live in single entry or gated communities want to be in that gated community. There's a sense of safety from living in that gated community, even though the research shows it's not any safer. So there would be a huge issue with getting public buy-in for that, and that would probably be the biggest challenge. Public health researchers could take this knowledge to try and secure some funds to maybe retrofit some communities to make them more walkable, add pedestrian gates. Doing it through a means of like safe routes to school might be a little more effective, because everyone wants kids to have a safe route to school, so that might be a way to do it. But if we could implement some policy changes to discourage future development of these single-entry communities, that would definitely be some beneficial for us in the future. And working with urban planners and policymakers to ensure that health is essentially at the bottom of all of these plans, it's the foundation. And fortunately, in Vegas, we're doing that in quite a few projects. They're starting to, urban planning and public health used to work together a lot, and luckily they're coming back together again. And so we're doing that in Vegas, where we're meeting and convening, and they are sort of asking our opinions on future planning in Las Vegas. So that is a model that, you know, these multidisciplinary teams works great, and should definitely be implemented across the board, and would have some huge implications, especially when it comes to urban design and walkability. Okay, so any questions? I don't know how much time I have. Yeah, it's fine. I think you would need some stakeholders in the community to sort of back you on it. I mean, if you had someone within that community that was on your side, quote unquote, I guess. Another thing I think, if I hate to say from like a top-down approach, but if it became sort of a movement within the city, like the mayor was supporting it, and Las Vegas is revitalizing its downtown and trying to make it more walkable and all of that. So if we could create a sort of more openness to this more walkable, more less exclusive type of neighborhood feel, I think that would be very beneficial. And as I mentioned, maybe sort of doing it under the guises of like safe routes to school or children, and everyone wants kids to be able to walk safely to school, and then people would also see the benefits of it. So I think if you had one community that really bought in, that would sort of spread, snowball. That would be my suggestion for it. I think it would be a hard challenge.
I just read a paper by Solis that was looking at environmental impacts on preschool obesity, but he didn't look at non-walkable areas specifically. Did you ever think about comparing, looking at weight outcomes from like NHANES data based on places to determine if these areas were less walkable, more likely to have obese preschoolers or middle schoolers or adults?
Yes. It's actually really hard to get neighborhood-based health data because everything's de-identified, and usually you can't really place it. NHANES, I think they do it by county.
Mm-hmm.
I know BRFSS is by county, so it's actually really hard to get neighborhood-based data. There are other studies that have done it, and they have found a correlation between walkable neighborhoods and lower BMIs. That's adults, though, not kids. I'm actually in the process of working on a study looking at children entering kindergarten, and looking at neighborhood factors in Las Vegas, not walkability, but access to parks and trails, and so we're in the process of doing that now. I can tell you that access to parks did make a slight difference in obesity status in preschoolers. So, I would love to do it more if I had the health data. So.